All right, we're back. Hour number two of Silver and Black today on this Monday, January 11th, 2021. We hope you're doing well. Scott Gulbranson rejoined by my partner, your boy Q Myers. And Q, I'll tell you what, you look at the playoffs. I thought it was a great weekend for the playoffs. The expanded playoffs. I mean, I think this justifies making sure that it continues and having that seventh team in and what it's been able to do and extending the amount of games, extending the interest per market.
Yeah, absolutely. And once they cleared it to open it up anyways for that seventh team, they're not going to go back. You know, they're not going back. They're going to get that dinero. They're going to get that money. And again, having their product on everybody's TV screens, no matter if it was a sports bar, if it was your house or wherever you were at, it was front and center for everybody. So that's how the NFL wants it. And that's how the NFL loves it. And so, yeah, they did a heck of a job. And I would thoroughly enjoy it the whole weekend. And yeah, I'm unfortunate that there ain't going to be six games this upcoming weekend, but still was excited to watch a lot of football action.
Well, any other, I know we talked about in the first segment of the show, we talked about the weekend and the games and the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game particularly and some of the others, but anything surprise you coming out of this first weekend and the wild card weekend?
I think that Seattle played the way it did. It played pretty poor and the Rams picked up the victory. And, you know, I know Seattle's defense has been suspect all year, but they just looked like they were just kind of a shell of themselves, you know, giving up 30 points to the Rams. I just kind of thought, and then obviously the Rams have a very, very strong defense. And so they gave Seattle the business. That was kind of surprising. And I think, That's probably the only one that that is really, really surprising. I didn't think that Buffalo Indianapolis game was going to be as close as it was, and I didn't think the Colts were going to have a chance to win at the end. But then they didn't. So you know, it is what it is.
No, and the Bills look good. I mean, I was impressed again with Josh Allen. I mean, he looked again mature, calm. He was never shaken throughout that game. And not that he played perfectly or anything like that, because you're right, the Colts. And I thought the Colts would play a closer game. I just thought, with some of the weapons they have and the veteran status of some of their players, that they would come to play, and that they were, that because people are in love with how the Bills are playing and that story, at least some people in the media, I thought that they would make it a closer game, and they did. But ultimately, Buffalo is not a team that I'd like to play in the playoffs, although I'm still having trouble seeing who's going to get past Kansas City unless they somehow get upended this weekend. I don't see it. I don't see anybody over there yet, Q, and maybe I'm wrong, maybe you disagree, but I don't see anybody to me who says, at least pregame, that they can beat the Chiefs at this point.
I mean, it's tough. I mean, they're defending Super Bowl champs for a reason. I mean, obviously, they're really, really stinking good. But I'll tell you, man, if there's a team that's built to do it, I honestly believe that the Browns could do it. You know, I think that with that run game, that two-headed monster, I think that that's really what could get it done. Now, they've got to play just about a perfect game. I think anyone who defeats Kansas City is going to have to play pretty much a perfect game, you know, and hope that the Chiefs make a couple mistakes. But you know, with that ground and pound game that they have, they get a couple of their guys back defensively, I could totally see them, you know, going and getting that dub and you know, moving on, you know, but it's going to be a tall task. So we'll see how it shakes out.
Yeah. And can you imagine Carl Joseph winning a Super Bowl ring? What kind of revision?
You know what's
history?
So funny? Yeah, you know what's so funny about that is he got that touchdown on Sunday, you know, that over Big Ben's head, that terrible snap, and he ends up falling on the ball. And all I saw, and I guess I should have put this into winners and losers, and I know that Raider Nation is going to get upset, but all I heard was people complaining and crying all weekend long about former Raiders that were playing in the playoffs on other teams. None of those guys outside of Danico Autry were really good with the Raiders. And it was like, oh, it's the organization's fault. No, sometimes the player's just not. Like, Jahad Ward was never good. No. He's still not good. He's with the Ravens, and so he has a role. But he's not good. TJ Carey, I liked him. He wasn't good. You know what I mean? He was just okay. So when these guys all leave, Mario Edwards, nobody thought that he was good, and he's still not good. And I know he played with Khalil Mack. I get it. Latavius Murray. Actually, I liked Latavius Murray. He actually played really well. But he went and got free agent money. I mean, yes, there was a lot of Raiders sprinkled in throughout the weekend, and so many people. Sometimes, and I'm sure you probably noticed, sometimes I just go ghost off of Twitter just because it just gets so, like, just too much and overwhelming. It's like, man, I get it. I know the Raiders aren't in the playoffs, and I know there's a bunch of former players, but there's a bunch of former players all over the league because free agency. I mean, it's just what it is. You can't keep everybody, and a lot of those guys that I just mentioned weren't very good with the silver and black. So just get over it. Just, well, I mean, it's crazy.
And not only that, Q, but to me, the point that just they miss completely with this is it's not about individuals. It's about a team. If a team is doing well and Carl Joseph happens to be on that team and that defense is playing well, that's not because of Carl Joseph. That's because the Browns are playing good defense. They have a good defensive front. They can actually sack the quarterback. Okay. Right. So the idea that somehow this player, had they stayed on the Raiders would be better. Because that's basically the assumption these folks who are arguing these points are making is ludicrous.
Yes, and Carl Joseph is not even liked by Browns fans. Carl Joseph, I mean, I'm serious. Fans don't even like him. They're like, man, that guy gives up a lot. He's not very good. He's basically a backup. But these guys have a right to work. So if they go and sign a one-year deal in Cleveland, or they go sign a one-year deal in Baltimore, or pop up with Buffalo or something like that, okay. It's these guys ain't superstars that the Raiders let go outside of Khalil Mack. I mean, that's it. That's the only person who played this weekend that's a superstar. And like I mentioned, Denico Autry with the Colts, he's a really good player. He is. And he's doing some really good things. So if I'm looking at any of the players that played this weekend and say, hey, it would be kind of nice to have him on the team. Obviously, yeah. Khalil Mack's a no-brainer. But Denico Autry is right there. Everyone else, it's like, okay, I get it. Congratulations. Hopefully they play well. I like Murray. I hope Murray does great. I like him a lot. You know, he was good with the Raiders, but, you know, anytime that they threw the ball to him, I got nervous because he always put the ball on the ground. He's playing well for the Saints, and he played well in Minnesota. I mean, he's a good running back, so cool, but I'm not losing sleep because he's no longer in the silver and black.
No, and the flip side of the coin there is a guy that you saw perform so well for the Raiders this year, and that was Nelson Aguilar. Go talk to people in Philadelphia about how they feel about Aguilar. Now, again, sometimes a change of address does you well. We see it all the time in sports, and so that's the way it is, but I just thought it was kind of funny that people were doing that. All right, it's that time of the day where we get the news and the views from on high. It's time for the Q-tip.
I can't hear you, Peach.
It's time to listen up, Raider Nation.
Can't hear you, Peach.
Clear out those ears and get ready for the Q-tip, your boy Q's daily take on what you need to hear.
That very precision seems to drive Q-tip fans right over the edge.
Like it or not.
All right, and today's Q-tip, I mean, this is something that I've been trying to hammer home and actually been talking about, Scott, for months now, and even before the season got started in 2020, was the fact that I just didn't believe that the Raiders had, you know, an alpha dog dude on the defensive side of the ball. And look, that's where I'm going to have a lot of my energy this offseason, is towards the defense, because I want to see how John Gruden, Mike Mayock and company, how they improve the defense. Obviously, it starts with the defensive coordinator, but I'm looking for them to go make moves. We've talked multiple times, me, you, Vinny, Hondo, we've all talked about guys that are veterans that could be brought into the Raiders team, you know, particularly on the defensive line or maybe even at the cornerback position, that could help just kind of guide these young dudes, because they don't have that. And I always go back to when Khalil Mack was a rookie, he had Justin Tuck, and Justin Tuck was at the end of his career, but he had been there, done that. He was a Super Bowl winner. He knew the ropes and kind of helped lead Khalil Mack down the right path. And well, you see who Khalil Mack is now, and I'm not saying that's all on Justin Tuck, but the Raiders need their Justin Tuck. You know, they need a guy like that. They need a guy who could be that veteran voice. We all heard what J.J. Watt said following the final game of the season for the Texans, and a lot of Raider Nation is like, hey man, go out and get J.J. Watt. He's clearly unhappy in Houston. Go make a trade for him. And I'm not saying no to that. They very well easily could do that. But what I'm saying for the Q-tip today is that they need a guy like that. They need a J.J. Watt. Or, and I don't know who watched the whole Ravens and Titans game, but they need a Calais Campbell. And again, not necessarily the dude Calais Campbell, but they need a Calais Campbell. And what I mean by that is he did this post-game interview with Tom Pelissero from the NFL Network, and just the passion and the energy and the want to in his voice, the veteran leadership, this is what I'm talking about. Listen to about a minute 15 of Calais Campbell.
Calais, I saw you barking at those guys during pregame warm-ups. You played with emotion, yelled Derrick Henry to 40 yards rushing. How did you dominate this game on D?
Man, we played good team ball. Good team ball. Everybody did their job as best they could do it. We played with heart and emotion. We knew it was going to be a tough matchup. He's a king. He's a beast. 2,000 yards. But today, he wasn't going to run the ball.
You guys said all the right things. things all week about what happened back in November, the logo thing. Peters picks off that ball. It was a group picture on the logo. What went into that?
Hey, man, I was just following my teammates. I had no idea that was happening.
Come on now, you've been around long enough. You know
what
you're
doing. I didn't know what was happening until I got there. But at the end of the day, I mean, hey, respect is earned. Respect is earned.
I know you're new here, but you also know Lamar Jackson heard a lot about what happened the past 2 years, not winning in the playoffs. For a young player like that, as talented as that, what does this win mean to him?
It means everything. It's the first one, but he got a long way to go. This team has a long way to go this year. We're going places.
You got the Bills or the Chiefs. Who do you want?
It don't matter. It don't matter. We probably have to get both of them anyway. It don't matter.
How does this team keep what you're doing rolling?
One play at a time. Earn the right. Earn the right to be a champion.
Congrats,
one play
guys.
At a time.
Appreciate it.
So right there, I mean, you can hear it in his voice. He's still fired up. He's pumped up. He talked about King Henry, Derrick Henry, and great, great respect. But at the same time, hey, you ain't going to get it done on us today. You know, and it's just the way he said it. And it's just you could tell that that voice rings louder in the room than a lot of other dudes. And if you remember going back to the beginning of the season, Jacksonville gave up Calais Campbell to the Ravens for like a third round pick. I mean, Basically for a cup of coffee, you know, at Terrible Herps. Is it Terrible Herps?
That's got it, right? You got it.
Yeah,
got it.
Exactly. Yeah. So see, I'm learning these things. So yeah, went in and got a cup of coffee at Terrible, Terrible Herbs, and that's what Calais Campbell went to the Ravens for. That's who the Raiders need to find. They need to find their version of that dude, a Calais Campbell, a J.J. Watt. You mentioned last week a Richard Sherman. They need someone like that that's got the skins on the wall, that's got the respect in the ear of the rest of the league, that can say, hey, this is how we do things. This is how you get done. You know, he said, The Ravens ain't done playing. It's one game at a time, one play at a time, and that's how they're going to do it. You know, it was talking glowingly about Lamar Jackson, but the work's not done. Still got a lot to do. You could just hear it. That's the kind of voice that the Raiders need in that locker room. That's what I'm hoping they go out and I don't know how they're going to do it. I don't know if it's going to be through free agency, if they're going to have to make a trade. I don't know what it is, but they need that piece, and particularly on the defensive line.
That's a good point, Q, and that's what I was going to ask you, because to me, we've talked about finding that kind of player like Campbell, and like you heard in that soundbite, that passion, that want to, which you always use, which I love as a term. And you look at that and you say, do they perhaps need that on the defensive line, like you said, but do they also need it in the backfield? Do they need two of those guys? And the reason I ask that is because you got to use draft capital. I understand they're going to have to use draft capital to help on defense too. But I just wonder, and this is what's going to be fascinating to me about how the Raiders handle this roster moving into the offseason, is how many of those guys are going to be veterans? Because I think there are veterans out there. We've talked about some of them on the show, on both the defensive line and in the defensive backfield, that you can go get to build up this defense. It's going to cost you money. And yes, It's harder when you're going after a veteran because you don't have those rookie deals. But to me, this Raider defense has to be turned around quickly, Q, so that they can match the window of opportunity with the offense that they have right now. And to be able to do that, I don't think they can do what they've done over the last few years, which is go all young on defense.
No, yeah, you're right. They definitely need it. And like you said, they might need multiple guys, you know, and it just depends on how big that voice is. You know what I mean? And so it's going to be interesting. Of course, it all really boils down to who's going to be the defensive coordinator, who are the Raiders comfortable with, and who is that defensive coordinator comfortable with? Because that guy may have a relationship with someone that maybe the Raiders weren't looking at or even thinking about, but maybe his voice in the room could say, hey, we do need to bring this guy in, and he's going to really help us out in a major way. You know, there's multiple guys out there. And I don't know, you know, like I said, what direction the Raiders want to go in that and getting that guy and bringing that guy in, but it's clearly needed. And the young dudes are great. I love the young dudes. I think they have a lot of potential. But, you know, and I keep pointing out the defensive line because I'm looking at dudes like Cleve Furrell. I'm looking at dudes like Max Crosby. You know, I'm looking at guys like that I know could be really good players. They just need somebody, you know, and I don't know how much – you know, how much production Khalil Mack had because of Justin Tuck. I just think that he became a better pro because of Justin Tuck.
Yeah, no doubt. And to me, that's also going to be, that's why we talked last week about Todd McShay's mock draft and the Raiders taking a wide receiver, and you said you could see it happening. I was a little more in disbelief, but the more I think through it, especially after listening to your Q-tip and talking about the type of guys they need on defense and the fact that it might be good, depending who's available, again, via trade or free agency, for them to go a little more veteran than you would think on the defense, that maybe that does free up the capital on the draft side that they could go for best player available. I know they haven't really done that over the course of Gruden's tenure back with the Raiders, but I'm saying this offseason, and this is the warning I want to send to Raiders fans, is don't get too bought into what you're reading or what people are saying, because they might go different directions that surprise you depending on availability because of that salary cap situation, and because that salary cap is going to be so far further down than it has been. You're going to see players available via trade, players available via the waiver wire that you might not have, that could come in and instantly improve this defense to the point where the Raiders can say, okay, you know what? Now we can actually take an offensive tackle in the draft in the first round, if that's what they did, for example, exactly. and not have to worry about going and getting an edge rusher because we just signed one or we traded for one. So that's where I'm telling people, don't get bought into, well, because they have to invest more on defense, that has to be their first and second round draft picks.
Right, exactly. I mean, they have to navigate through the whole draft. That's something that Mike Mayock has said, too. Like, everyone gets hung up on round one, round two, maybe even a little bit of round three, especially in the Raiders, in their position last season when they had three third-round picks. But it's a seven-round draft. You know what I mean? Like, you can get guys in the seventh round. You got to lean on your scouting department. You got to lean on all the guys, that you trust, your personnel guys. Because this year, unlike the past couple seasons, the Raiders don't have multiple first-round picks. They have one. Right. You know what I mean? So you better get it right. You don't have multiple shots at it. You're not going to get, Josh Jacobs. You're not going to get Cleve Farrell, and you're not going to get Jonathan Abram all in the same round. I mean, you're going to have to go out there and you're going to have to figure it out. So yeah, it should be interesting, man. It should be really, really interesting.
Well, and Q, in closing on that note too, we've talked about on this show as well, which is this is the weirdest draft ever because of the fact of COVID, because of the fact that college football was so disrupted. You had players who opted out. So if there's a year when you trade draft capital or you go get veterans instead of getting those young players on those young deals, this is the one. So the Raiders, I think salary cap management will be big, and then who's available will have a big impact on how they go into the draft come April. All right, that's going to conclude it for this segment. We're going to say goodbye to Q again. Q, thanks as always, my man. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
All right, brother. Appreciate you, man. Raider Nation, keep doing what you do. I said, what up?
I'll do that. When we come back, Hondo Carpenter will rejoin me, and we will also talk to Hunter Renfro. Yes, it's a 13 Minutes with Hunter Renfro segment brought to you by the Laborers Local 872. Coming up right after this one here on a Monday, Raider Nation Radio.
Some call him the slot machine. Others call him Third and Renfro. It's time for our weekly conversation with Las Vegas Raiders wide receiver Hunter Renfro. You're tuned into 13 Minutes with Hunter Renfro, exclusively on Silver and Black Today on Raider Nation Radio 920 AM.
Welcome back, Scott Branson, along with Hondo Carpenter for 13 Minutes with Hunter Renfro, brought to you by our good friends, the men and women who build Las Vegas. That, of course, is the Laborers Local 872. All right, Hunter, you had the weekend off, sort of. Did you watch some football? It was a pretty good weekend as far as the playoffs were concerned. I'm sure you had some friends out there. But what were your impressions of Wild Card Weekend, besides the fact that you wish you guys had been there?
Last little phrase, wishing we would be there. It's like the best time to be a football fan. You got three games, I guess, on, or you got a bunch of games on Saturday, a bunch of games on Sunday, and then you got national championship on Monday. So it's a good three little day stretch for us here. But you nailed it in the head with the wishing we were there. I feel like I've been depressed all weekend. I mean, I'm watching football, but it's just like, it's not the same, when you're not in it.
Yeah, absolutely. And Hunter, that's the question I had for you too, is, you look at what happened this weekend, the game, I thought the Cleveland-Pittsburgh game that surprised the heck out of me coming up that first quarter, 28-0. Now, the question I have for you, and I'm not asking you to comment on players, but Juju Smith-Schuster kind of talked some stuff before the game, kind of disparaging what at least the Cleveland players thought was disparaging remarks. We know in high school and college, bulletin board material, it can kind of be the difference sometimes. When you guys are pro athletes, you are out there, you're getting paid, you go about it methodically, your business, it is work every day. It's a tough job. Does it really give you that extra juice? I mean, Cleveland said it did. Have you been in that situation, and is that why you guys also too watch what you say?
Yeah, I think a little of that. I think as professional athletes, and really, if you're doing anything, you're always looking for that edge, you know. Mm. And you'll take it however you can get it. I think the best teams and the elite teams out there, they look for that edge, and they found it with, I guess, what Juju said or whatnot. But yeah, it's interesting, you know. If Cleveland would not have won that game, it'd be interesting if they would have came out and said they didn't like it. So I think whenever you win the game, it's easy to come out and say, oh, we use that as motivation. Whereas I think it's just interesting. I think it's two sides to it for sure.
Hunter, this is Hondo Carpenter. I'm doing a story on where I've talked to three general managers about Derek, and all of them are huge fans of him. And they talk about his ability with all the injuries to the offensive line the last 2 years to get rid of the ball quickly. That's why there haven't been as many sacks. And they think the things that he does that don't show up in the stat sheet are what really makes him a top 10 quarterback in the NFL. Mm-hmm. For fans who maybe don't see the game, like those of us that get to watch it all the time or you that play it, can you concur with these general managers and just talk a little bit about some of the things that you think he doesn't get enough credit for, please?
Absolutely, yeah. I think you said it by talking to them that I think obviously Derek's elite throwing the ball, but it's all the things that you don't see. You know, it's we had some injuries in the offensive line. We had some new guys step up, and you don't always have that cohesiveness. And so, yeah, you're dropping back there as Derek, and you have these 300-pound guys running right at you, trying to kill you. You might need to get the ball out a little quicker. You might check to a play where you can get the ball out quicker. Whereas if he took a drop back, it might be a sack. But it's Derek at the line of scrimmage kind of processing all of that. It's amazing. He's trying to process the coverage. He's trying to know what personnel he's in. He's in the back of his mind knowing he has a left guard that's a rookie that's new. And he's sitting there digesting all this information, kind of processing it. And then he still has to go out there and perform at a top level. And so, and Coach Gruden is giving the play call, and it's very, very lengthy. And so I think Derek just does an amazing job of that. I don't think a lot of fans see that. All they see is him just back there, dropping back, making the throw. When you're throwing to a guy like Henry or me, which is a huge speed difference, that's something else that come into play. So there's just so many things that come in with Derek back there that he's got to process and then be able to go perform. And I think that's why he's special. He's able to do all that at a high level.
You're listening to 13 Minutes with Hunter Renfrow, brought to you by the Laborers Local 872. And Hunter, you look at the AFC side, and that's, you know, Derek now in the AFC is sort of like the elder statesman of quarterbacks, because the average age of the quarterback still left in the NFL playoffs on the AFC side is about just under 25 years. On the NFC side, it's just under 38. So you look at that, but you look at these guys that have been in the playoffs on the AFC side, and it's got to be great for you and for him and for the team, for your guys, to see that he hangs up there with all those guys that are out there playing right now.
Absolutely, yeah, he does, and we beat a lot of them. You know, we beat the Browns, we beat the Chiefs, we beat the Saints over the NFC side, so we have confidence knowing we can play with those guys, and we're so close. And I think that's kind of what the frustrating part with how we finished this year, but I think that gives us all the confidence in the world to know that, hey, we're right up there with these guys. We just got to be a little more consistent, make a little more plays down the stretch. But, I mean, we're not far off from making a run here. So I think when we have a leader like Derek, it just makes it that much better, because he's been around. He's been through some ups and downs, but we know he has what it takes, and he's proven it.
Hunter, I'd like to ask you a personal question, because I like to let fans get inside the helmet. Your faith is so critical to you, as it is to many players on this Raiders team. And I'm curious, with the coronavirus going on, moving to a new city, and all of the uncertainty, you had an amazing year. You stayed focused. How much of that can you attribute to your faith?
Yeah, I can contribute all of it. I think my wife did a great job of keeping me level-headed, but I think it ultimately came down to my faith and my relationship with Christ and how football is just a game. Yeah, it's tough. It's something that we do, but it's not who we are. And it's just like any job, you know. If I was an accountant, if I was a teacher, if I was a sports bettor, you know, whatever it is, if I was a radio show host, a journalist, that's what you do, but it's not who you are. And so I think as you navigate through life, you have a certain peace. I know I do have a certain peace about how I go about things, and that at the end of the day, we could lose every game and still going to be okay. That's not what we want. That certainly, I mean, it sucks. That's not what we're striving for. We're striving to win every game, but at the end of the day, that's ultimately what matters. What your relationship is, and with Christ, and whenever football is long and gone, and 100 years from now, he'll still be there. And so that's kind of driven me, and I appreciate you bringing that up for sure.
Yeah, well said. And Hunter, now the season's over for you as far as games on the field go. But you know, you're a professional athlete, so it's what you do. So you have to constantly work. There's some time off, and I know you have the baby coming soon. But at the same time, you know, how long does it take for you? Because I'm a routine guy, right? So I have my routine, and I love my routine. And you guys have had a routine through the course of the season ever since you got into camp, and now it changes up, and you got a baby on the way. How long does it take for you to kind of maybe get into that new routine of the off season?
I don't know. I mean, last year I was talking to my wife earlier. We went back to South Carolina, and it felt like it was a month and a half before I even got to put my feet up, you know, and get settled down. We're moving into a new house. This year I'm like 3 days in and I'm already bored out of my mind. I'm like, all right, I want to go do some yoga, stretch. I mean, go catch football. Like, I'm just so bored, you know? And so it's going to take some time, but I really do. I think, and I heard while I was at Clemson, we had a guy come in and talk, and he talked about you're either going to be successful or you're not, what you do in your downtime. Mm-hmm. And I think that's critical, and I think that's important for me. It's okay to be bored. It's okay. That's when you grow. That's when you find ways to get better at things that you do. And so I'm hopefully be bored the next 2 months, kind of be something else we talked about at Clemson was – the path to the top and the path to success is often lonely. And if everybody was doing it, then everyone would be having success. You know, it'd be easy. So I think just being lonely, just kind of keeping that tunnel vision, finding ways you can get better and keeping your priorities in line is usually the best way to go. You don't get sidetracked by all the craziness of life.
Now, does that mean, Hunter, you already have the baby's room ready to go? It's all set?
My wife had that thing ready in August. Whenever she found out. That thing has been for sure ready.
I love it. Hondo and I, both as fathers, we understand that. Okay, before we let you go, my man, Ohio State, Alabama tonight. Everybody thinks this is going to be an easy win for Alabama. How do you see it?
You know, if Ohio State played like they did against Clemson, then Alabama's going to be in for a journey, you know. If Ohio State plays well, if Justin Fields play well, and they can if they can find someone who can cover Devontae Smith, then it could be a game. But if not, it could get ugly. And it's going to be interesting to see if Saban, what, has 6 championships now? Is that what he has? He has 6 national championships, so might be on the way to 7.
Yeah, I know, and I know you're disappointed the Tigers aren't there, but it should be a fun game. Hunter, as always, man, we appreciate you. We'll talk to you next week for the final time. Enjoy that boredom, and I'm sure you'll find something to do.
Absolutely. Thank you all again. Appreciate it.
All right, there you go. Hunter Renfro, 13 Minutes with Hunter Renfro, brought to you by the Laborers Local 872. And Hondo, such a good kid to talk to. And I love the fact that he's saying it's only been 3 days and he's already bored, because that tells you, like he said earlier, and that is that he's focused and these guys know that they're close. The Raiders feel and think that they are close to breaking through.
They are, and you know what? They should feel that boredom. I think that goes right back to what I said earlier. Good call by you, Scott. You want people that don't play this game because of the money. They play, you know, they love the money. Don't get me wrong, and who wouldn't? But they play it because they love it. And Hunter Renfro is one of those guys. Every time you watch him play, you know you're going to see the best that Hunter Renfro offers. I think he's just one of the amazing building blocks that this team has and why I don't think the Raiders are that far off.
No, yeah, he's always fun to talk to. And to your point, and you asked him about his faith, which is huge for him. And I know I've talked to him about it even offline. And he's about to become a father, so he's about to go through that big experience as well. But he always stays grounded, and that's the kind of guy, you know, you talk about building a team and the kind of guys you want around the locker room, and that's one of those guys. You know, he's not a loud vocal leader. He's just a guy who goes out, does his job, and lives a good life. And it's really encouraging to see a young player do that. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll get back to talking Raiders, and then we'll also talk a little bit on legal action, Hondo. So put on your black robe, pretend like you're a judge, because Sam and Ash are coming up next here on Silver and Black Today with Hondo and Scott on this Monday.
Welcome back to Silver and Black Today. Here's Scott Gulbranson and Q Myers.
Welcome back, Silver and Black Today, here on Raider Nation Radio. Scott Gulbranson with my special co-host, Hondo Carpenter from Sports Illustrated, of course, the Raider Maven website. If you don't read it, you should. You should also follow Hondo at Hondo Carpenter. We call him Uncle Hondo here. He's going to be on with me Wednesday too, so he'll be stopping by a lot more, right, Hondo? You're kind of moving in. You're staying on the guest room couch.
Absolutely. Anytime you want me, you've got me. I love doing this. I love interacting with the fans. So thank you for having me.
Yeah, no, of course. It's fun having you on, and Raider Nation loves talking with you, so it's good stuff. And, you know, this time of the day, too, Hondo, you know, we start to see some news. We saw earlier in the day, of course, Peterson from the Eagles fired as head coach of the Eagles after all that end of season. Did they tank? Did he take out? Oh, my gosh, why am I forgetting the quarterback's name? Hello, help me. So it's
Carson.
Carson, yeah. It's interesting how, you expect a lot of the coaching changes. You know Adam Gase in New York, he was going to be out. You knew some of the other things that were coming on down the line. But then you have the situation in Philadelphia. And then, of course, Dan Quinn just hired as a defensive coordinator for the Dallas Cowboys after being fired in Week 3. From the Atlanta Falcons. So there's a lot of movement going on and a lot of coaches out there. It's a tough business, Hondo.
Well, it's a very tough business, but that's why they're paid a lot of money. And, you know, I have several friends that are in the professional coaching business, and one of them in particular got paid almost $20 million to walk away. And I remember him saying to me when he took the job, he had a very, very good job. And he took a head coaching job in a professional team. And we were talking about it. And he said, you know what? You don't get enough time in these jobs because people are impatient. He said, that's why we get the contracts that we do, because when people are impatient, they pay us to go away. So at the end of the day, that's why they're paid a lot of money.
They are. Absolutely. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see what happens this week with the Raiders. You know, everything that I keep hearing, Hondo, I don't know if you're hearing the same thing, is that they want to wrap this up this week sometime. But you never know. You never know what happens, because like you said, someone can walk in the door and impress you and things change. The whole course of the hire could change. But I certainly hope to do that. They need to start planning not only for free agency in the draft, but also any other types of player acquisition that they may be up to. All right, we are now bringing on our good friend Sam from Sam and Ash. Of course, Sam and Ash, a proud sponsor here on Silver and Black Today. And if you need an injury attorney in Las Vegas, that's where you go. These are my attorneys. I trust them. This is not just an ad. These are good friends of mine, and we bring them on every Monday. We talk about stuff that's going on. How you doing, Sam?
Good. I'm doing great. Good to be with you guys.
Yeah, thanks for being with us again. And I got to tell you, and we don't get political on this show, right? It's not a politics show. There's a time and place for that stuff. But the thing that I've seen you talk about a little bit is freedom of speech. You know, freedom of speech, there's a debate going on now. It doesn't matter what side of the coin you're on. It is a debate. People are talking about free speech. They're talking about these digital platforms and who can speak on them. What is hate speech? What is inciting violence? What all this kind of stuff? People are starting to talk a lot about the Constitution, Sam, which, of course, you know, going back to year one of law school. But when you look at this stuff and what's constitutionally protected, what's not, it's not real easy for all of us to understand, is it?
Well, no, it's not. And even among lawyers that practice First Amendment law, there's an enormous amount of debate right now. So this issue really broken down is pretty simple. The First Amendment protects you from interference by the government. Right. So the government can't take away your right to speak. The government can also cannot compel you to speak. So that those are the two components of that. But I think one of the more interesting things here is that the law, as a result of everything that's happened, well, this week and last year and the year before that, I could see this being ripe for a challenge. And the premise of the challenge would be that it's that this is our new city square, if you will, right? Mm-hmm. Because before you know, if you wanted to communicate, you'd type up some kind of, you know, print out a bill and, or you'd go out in town square and shout your opinions. But, you know, we don't have that. We've got Twitter, we've got Facebook, we've got social media, and for better or for worse, it's where we go now to congregate as a society and exchange ideas. And there's an interesting precedent. There actually was a Supreme Court case some years ago, all the way back in 1980. And it said that, you know, if you own a private shopping mall, you've got to allow people into your private shopping mall to participate in free speech activity, to share their opinions, to protest. And that was the very reasoning they gave. Hey, we don't have town squares anymore. Everybody goes to the mall. And I could see something like this coming around and changing.
Hi, this is Hondo Carpenter, and I have a question for you about freedom of assembly. And also, we know that clearly the government doesn't get involved, not supposed to get involved in church business. I'm just curious. I understand that I'm not questioning anyone's motive wanting to protect people, but if consenting adults want to go out in public where there's bigger than 50 people, or they want to go to church where people have been restricted, I mean, it, to me, that seems like an overreach from the government. If my wife and I want to go out to dinner and there's 50 people there at a private establishment, or 150, and that's our decision, or go to church where there's 1,000 people, what are your thoughts legally on the government's ability to limit assembly?
So they're able to do it. That's the short answer, Hondo. There are cases where similar situations for health reasons, limits were placed, like what we have right now with COVID. Where you get into trouble constitutionally is when you put an undue burden on religion, for example, and the free exercise of religion, and you put greater restrictions on, say, a religious gathering than you do a commercial activity or a social activity. And that's where a number of these cases succeeded in their challenges to various governors, and I think it was just the governor in New York. Yeah. Mm-hmm. In the restrictions that were put forward. So those were the cases, I think, that if you can call them the better cases, the ones that actually ended up succeeding.
Yeah. Sam from Sam and Ash is with us here. We're talking all things legal. We'll also talk a little bit of football with Sam here in a minute. And Sam, one of the things that we've talked to you numerous times about on this show and you guys deal with is the situation with bicyclists in the Valley, with the roads getting more crowded, with the way our road system is too, where you often have areas of roads that are not finished yet because of the massive growth in the Las Vegas Valley. We had another gentleman, unfortunately, 71 years old, was killed in an accident. A woman pulled out of her driveway, 62-year-old woman, and struck the man. I'm wondering too, because I understand the right of way and the laws around bicyclists and all that too. I've also had run-ins with bicyclists who I don't believe are obeying the law. What do we have to do? No, I'm serious. I have.
I've seen it too.
I know cyclists will get all over me for that, because I know most of the time it's the motorist, not the cyclist. I would agree with that. But in these cases where we're starting to see this kind of urban environment grow and grow and grow. But we're also seeing a lot of people who've now come to Las Vegas who either find this hobby, they want to do it for all the right reasons, of course, for exercise and to get out in the beautiful Southern Nevada air here. But also a lot of them come from other areas where they have dedicated bike lanes and all this kind of stuff, which we don't have here. What's kind of the, is there going to be some sort of head that comes here where we have to figure out something new? Is there going to be heavier penalties for people who hit bicyclists, or how are you looking at this, and what are you seeing in the way of this happening more and more?
I think the best thing that we can do is have these conversations and be talking about it. Yeah, we've had a number of really awful, high-profile accidents that have happened recently. But you know, the sad thing is that bicyclists get hit every day. Yeah. One thing that I don't think a lot of people know is that we're obligated here in Nevada, if we have a free lane, to move over one lane. So if there's two lanes going one direction as a bicyclist off in the shoulder, you're actually required by law to move over to the lane further away from the shoulder if you can do so safely. Yeah. And we don't do that. So for everybody out there, just drive safely. Bicyclists are out there. They're allowed to be there. And you've got to know that when you know a bicyclist and a car collide, it's really not a fair matchup.
No, it's not. And I know people get frustrated too. One of the things that I've heard is, well, you know, these bicyclists, they don't go single file, so they'll take up a whole lane. But as you just mentioned, the law here in Nevada is even if you have three bicyclists side by side, parallel to one another, you still need to move over for them.
Yeah, and I think that's good to do regardless of what the law is. I mean, make a wide turn around the bicyclist. Don't be a jerk. You know, I think a lot of our driving problems, and I'm relatively new to Nevada, so this is just an outsider's observation. We have a lot of anger here. It's like, calm down. It's not personal. Drive safely. If there's some jerk bicyclist driving, you know, three abreast along, you know, the side, and they're taking up a bunch of space, don't be the guy that drives right by them super close to, you know, to teach them a lesson. Don't do that. In one split second, everything can change, and it will. It's not worth it. So I've witnessed a lot of weird stuff on the road myself. Of course, represented a number of bicyclists in accidents, and it's been it's really heartbreaking when something goes wrong.
Sam, Antonin Scalia to me was just the role model for judges when he made the comment, "A good judge will oftentimes see himself rule against his personal convictions when they don't match the law." As a guy who works in the legal field, how true is that?
Truer words were never spoken. And I'll tell you, one of the things that you find when you apply that principle is friendless. Because you're most people, when they look at issues, they look at them based on their opinions and their persuasions. And I look at issues always based on law. And I take the facts and I have to be dispassionate about it. And I'm very fortunate. I represent clients who deserve this level of representation. They deserve this kind of dispassion, and it's important because, you know, you can't get wrapped up in things and make it about emotion. It has to be about the facts of the case. It's I always love that quote.
Yeah, it's very good. Sam and Ash is with us, of course. You can check them out at samandashlaw.com. Sam, before we let you go, obviously an interesting NFL weekend with the playoffs and no Raiders, obviously, in the playoffs this week. But did you catch any of the action, and which game did you watch?
You know what? I didn't. I have to admit I took some time off. You know, I was in Europe. I went to visit my son. And candidly, with the Raiders out, of course, when you say not this week, I mean, next offseason, we're in it. I know we are. I believe it. But we're sitting this one out, so I've been out of the loop to be totally honest.
That's all right. We're going into the speculation season now anyway, so that'll be fun. But as always, we appreciate you coming on and talking legal with us, because it's important stuff, and this is stuff everybody needs to know. So we certainly appreciate that, and we will talk to you next week, my man.
Thanks. Great to be with you, Scott and Hondo. Great to talk to you.
Great to talk to you, buddy. Thank you.
All right. There you go.
Be well,
Sam
guys.
And Sam and Ash. Ash was off representing a client, right? So that's what they do. If she's busy and can't make it, she can't make it, because she's out there looking for you. And you are what matters to them. So make sure you check them out at samandash.com. Hondo, we got about 5 minutes left. A couple of things I want to talk about. This becomes the part of the season where, for those of us who are NFL fanatics and for those in Raider Nation, the most passionate fan base there is, they start jonesing for materials, right? And so in the media, we try to do stuff like mock drafts and all that stuff. It's very early, especially this year with what's going on, what happened with COVID in college football, and college football officially ends tonight. But when you look at the next few months, we know we have the defensive coordinator. If you're a Raiders fan, Hondo, and you're reading Sports Illustrated's Raider Maven website, or you're listening to this show, or you're getting news wherever you're getting your news about the Raiders, what would you be looking for over the next few weeks to kind of keep you abreast of what's going on with this team moving into 2021?
Well, I'll give you a couple. First of all, I've been pimping this article for a couple of weeks, but I keep getting more and more information. We've been talking to general managers around the league about Derek Carr, wanting to know, who cares what Scott Gobranson or Hondo Carpenter think, or Sam or Ash or anyone else. Let's find out what the people that compete with them. Another thing we're doing is we're using our vast resources of connections to the college game and other NFL teams to find out who Mike Mayock and his staff are really zeroing in on and looking at for those high draft picks. We're actually going to start providing some bios about those guys. And let me share this with you. For several years now, over 20 years, I've done a mock draft. And for one example, the year Tim Tebow, we were the only major mock draft that had Tim Tebow going in the first round. That's, you may remember that Mike and Mike had me on to talk about it after he got picked. So our first mock draft comes literally 2 days after the Super Bowl, where our mock draft's a little bit different. I get friends of mine who work in management around the league to help make what they're hearing and how they think teams are going to pick. I think that's why we've been so accurate. That's very important. And again, I keep reiterating this because I don't think you can reiterate it enough. The biggest Raider question is going to be John Gruden.
Yeah.
And absolutely. And to me, he's going to be under the microscope. If he goes to In-N-Out or Taco Bell for lunch, get the story. It is going to be John Gruden, because to me, what makes this so special is this is his time to show people who he is. And now some of his critics are saying, well, he's a great offensive mind, but only with Tony Dungy's defense did he win. I don't think that's the case.
No, and he wants
but
to.
He's got
to dispel those rumors by making it work. Hondo, we're out of time, my friend. We will talk to you on Wednesday. Thanks again for being with us, buddy.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. That was Hondo Carpenter, my special guest host. We're out of here tomorrow. Rod Graves from the Fritz Pollard Foundation on minority hiring in the NFL, and Jesse Merrick for his usual Tuesday spot as well. For Q Myers, for Chris Chapman, for Hondo Carpenter, I'm Scott Gobranson. We'll talk to you tomorrow, guys.